Hello, and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. There's a handout for this podcast, so please check for it and print it out if you have the opportunity. And this podcast itself features Rabbi David Levenkreus and Yael Krieger. Rabbi David Levenkreus is a faculty member of Pardes and serves as a director of special programs. Yael Krieger is a student in the Pardes Educators Program. So now, Rabbi David Levenkreus and Yael Krieger with Parshat Vayikra.
Hamelech ha-yoshev al-kiseh ram v'nisa Lifnei melech malchei hamlachim ha-kadosh baruch hu.
Thank you, Yael Krieger of the Pardes Educators Program, and thank you, Larry. Yael was singing a medley of two songs from the liturgy which speak about God as being king, God as being the king of the universe. Many people have problems with God as king, whether it be for feminist reasons, because of the hierarchy involved, because of the fact that nowadays we know kings, we know what royal families are like, and we don't necessarily like the idea of God being compared to that king. So what we're going to do today is we're going to look at this week's parasha when we read about the sacrifice that a king needs to bring if he has done an inadvertent sin, if he has sinned bishkaga, by mistake. We're going to look at the sacrifice that the king has to bring. We're going to look at it in the context of other sacrifices. And from this, we're going to learn a little bit about the role of the king in the Jewish state. We're going to learn a little bit about relating to God as king. We're going to learn a little bit about what our expectations are of our leaders in terms of behavior, a very, very germane issue. And finally, we're even going to get a little insight into what is special about the book of Vayikra, Leviticus, which is the parasha which we begin to read this Shabbat. So let's go straight ahead and do it. If you have the source sheet in front of you, it'll be very helpful, but I will speak in such a way that even if you don't have the source sheet, it should be clear. Chapter 4 of Vayikra, chapter 4 of Leviticus, deals with the different korbanot that need to be brought in a case where a sin is done, bishkaga. It starts off in Vayikra 4:3, speaking about the kohen. And the pasuk says, "Im haKohen haMashiach yechata, if the anointed prince, anointed priest, has a sin, leAshmat haAm, he makes a sin that brings guilt upon other people. Perhaps he gives an incorrect ruling. Perhaps he sacrifices something incorrectly. But whatever it is, the kohen." The priest has done something which causes evil to the people, and he himself has to bring a sacrifice. If that happens, he needs to bring the sacrifice. And Vayikra 4:12 tells us where does the sacrifice end up? It says El Michutz LeMachaneh, outside of the camp. So we have the anointed priest makes a mistake which affects the people. If he does this, he gives a sacrifice which ends up outside the camp. That is the first person we learn about. In Vayikra 4:13, we have the same moniker, Ve'im Kol Adat Yisrael Yeshgu. If the entire community of Israel commits inadvertent sin, why? They didn't know something. It was something they were unaware of. Either they'd been given a wrong ruling, or perhaps, as sometimes does happen, an entire nation makes a mistake, an entire nation does something wrong. They may not be aiming to do something wrong. This happens in the history of nations. Wrong decisions are made. If this should happen, they too need to bring a sacrifice. And where does the sacrifice end up? As with the Kohen, we read in Vayikra 4:21, El Michutz LeMachaneh. The sacrifice ends up outside the camp. So whether it's a Kohen or the entire community of Israel who commit an inadvertent violation which has an effect on others, they need to bring a sacrifice, and that sacrifice is given el michutz lemachaneh. Suddenly, when we get to Vayikra 4:22, and we read about the Nasi, which most commentators understand as being the king of Israel, when we read about the Nasi, rather than if we read Asher, concerning the king who commits a violation. And in a little while we will look at why it is Asher and what the rabbis did with the word Asher. Regardless, we read over here Asher concerning the king who commits a sin. We read nothing about the effects that the sin had on other people. And when he brings a sacrifice, it's not given or does not end up el michutz lemachaneh, but rather in Vayikra 4:26, we read that it is given on the Mizbeach, on the altar. Similarly, when we get to 4:27, we read that a commoner, a nefesh echad, gives a sin. That gives a sin offering, gives an offering. That offering too, if we see Vayikra 4:31, is sacrificed on the Mizbeach, the altar. And the moniker which we saw at the beginning is used there too, if. So looking at this from a structural viewpoint, we have a number of interesting things. If, is used for everybody except for the king. The Kohen and the community of Israel sacrifice el michutz lemachaneh, outside the camp, whereas the king and the commoner give a regular sacrifice, an ordinary sacrifice, on the Mizbeach, on the altar, the same way as other sacrifices are given. Just by looking at the structure of this chapter, we are going to be led into wonderful insights about the role of the king in society. If we look at it as a hierarchy, we see that the king falls somewhere in between the Kohen and the entire community of Israel and the individual. Somewhere in between the Kohen, who is the symbol of godliness, the entire community of Israel, which also is somehow a repository of godliness, and the ordinary individual Jew, somewhere in between those two, we have the king. However, if we look at it through the lens of which sacrifice is brought for the inadvertent sin, it's clear that the king is very, very much on the side of the commoner. A king is expected to behave in the same way and according to the same rules as a common person. This, ladies and gentlemen listening to the podcast, this is an incredible chidush, an incredibly revolutionary idea. Until very, very recently, by which I mean a few hundred years ago, in many, many European and other countries, you really had kings who were ruled by divine right, who the assumption was that they were above the law. And here we have in the book of Vayikra already the idea that the king is like a commoner in the sense of what he is able, or shall I say better, what he is allowed to do. And indeed, if we look on the second part of the source sheet, in Dvarim 17:18-20, we read that the king needs to have a Torah scroll written for him, which he then reads from, and this helps him not to feel superior to his brethren. Ulebilti sur min mitzvah, mitzvah yamin usmol, and not to swerve, not to stray from the mitzvot to the right or to the left. These cluster of psukim, these cluster of verses, I think in a very, very powerful way show the dual nature of the king. On the one hand, he's somebody special. Not every Jew has a Sefer Torah written for him. On the other hand, the purpose of this is for him to read it and to remind himself that he needs to keep to the same rules as everybody else. So what we have over here is a powerful, very, very powerful statement that the king is not above the law, but is expected to keep the same rules as everybody else. And this idea is reinforced with the whole idea of Asher. We asked ourselves, why does this pasuk begin Asher concerning rather than Ve'im? And I think the Sforno says it very nicely. He says, Ki omnam ze devar matzu sheyichateh. It is the type of thing that is going to happen. Inevitably, a ruler has to make so many difficult decisions that it is virtually impossible not to harm innocent people in the process. But if it happens, they need to feel remorse, they need to recognize it, they need to apologize, they need to bring a sacrifice. So again, we see the idea. On the one hand, we recognize the king as somebody special, and we understand that he may behave in ways that are different from others, but we hold the king to the same rule as everybody else. And in Horayot, in the Gemara of Horayot, they make a pun on the Asher. Asher means concerning, but it's connected, or it sounds like the word Ashrei, which means happy. And we read, Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai said, Ashrei hador sha'anasi shelo mevir koban al shkagato. Happy is the generation whose ruler brings a sacrifice for a sin he has committed unwittingly. If its ruler brings a sacrifice, is there any need to say what one of the common people would do? And if he brings a sacrifice for a sin he has committed unwillingly, is there any need to say what he would do in case of a sin committed willfully? Again, on the one hand, he is an example to the rest of the community. On the other hand, we're emphasizing the idea that he needs to keep to the same rules as everybody else. And this fits in beautifully with where he stands in the hierarchy. On the one hand, he's like the Kohen. He is an example. He's somebody who has to represent God to the people. On the other hand, when it comes to expectations, he's like everybody else. And we're even a little harder on the king because power brings with it inevitable corruption, and the king needs to be on the lookout for it and to be sure to make amends when these things happen. Whew, we've done a lot of stuff. How does this affect the way we relate to God? I think it's very, very interesting, and I think it goes in two different directions. Two different directions which I think will help us, if not solve, at least understand one of the questions we started off with, which is how do I relate to God as king? On the one hand, if the king is no longer an absolute ruler, the king is no longer the law, it makes God stronger. If you look right at the end of the source sheet, Vayikra 25:55, Ki li v'nei Yisrael avadim, avadaihem asher otzeiti otam me'eretz Mitzrayim, ani Adonai Elohechem. The Israelites are my slaves. They are my slaves because I brought them out of Egypt. I am God your Lord. It means that the power we once gave to kings, we now give to God. God is the absolute ruler. Because the king now is expected to keep to the same rules as every other Jew, it frees up that space for God to take, and God is the absolute ruler. But in a fascinating way, I think it works in the other direction too. If the king has to keep to the same rules as everybody else, then maybe God, in Yael's words, Melech, or Yael's words from Aleinu, Melech Malchei Hamlachim, the King of Kings also, has to keep to the same rules. And there can be no more powerful statement of this than of Avraham when he was arguing with God at Sodom and asking him to save the city. Hashofet kol ha'aretz lo yaseh mishpat. Shall the whole world's judge not act justly? God, you too need to behave according to the rules you've set up. And so in some ironic way, we raise God up, but we also make God more accountable. I think these ideas can help us understand a little bit how we relate to God as King. I think a more nuanced understanding of what it means for God to be King. On the one hand, all powerful and all responsible, but also accountable. I think it can change. I don't think it solves all the issues, but I think it can change the way we relate to God as King. I think the idea that the king needs to be kept to the same moral standard as everybody else is important for us to remember when we look at our leaders. But I think these insights can also help us understand a little bit the book of Vayikra. In ancient times, in many, many religions, priestly practices were not known by the common people. Only the leaders, only the priests themselves knew the rules. And when a common person came to the temple, they had no idea, came to a particular temple, they had no idea what was going on. To this day, their religions, like the Druze in the north of Israel, where only the clergy knows the precise details of the religion, and the rest of the people do not. Vayikra, from that sense, is an incredibly revolutionary book. Suddenly, the entire nation of Israel is able to read it, understand it, and know what is going on in the temple. Rather in the way that God is brought down and made accountable to the people, so too the priests are brought down and made accountable to the people. But there's an opposite phenomenon going on. And that is that I think the general knowledge, the democratization of the priestly code will also raise it. If a person comes to the temple and knows why they're bringing a sacrifice, this is far more meaningful. If they know what the rules are, it has far greater impact on them and on others. When the temple was destroyed, we could learn these rules and gain so much from learning their details, as I hope we have today. Learn about how we relate to leaders. Learn about how we relate to God, and the positive and negative qualities of looking at God in certain ways. So at the same time as it brings the priest closer to us, I think it also raises the entire system in the same way as seeing God as seeing the king accountable to us raises God. And so I think we see two directions going on, raising and lowering, raising God and making God more accountable, seeing the king as being great, but also holding the king to our own rules. A text, on the one hand, makes the system accountable to us, but also raises it in a very, very powerful way. I'm not one who goes for jingoism, or for saying my religion is better than yours. Far from it. And yet when I look at ideas like this, I'm very, very proud of the Torah and the way it deals with the world. I'm tempted to say the classic bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem, Elokeinu Melech Haolam, Shechiyanu V'kimanu V'higiyanu Lazman Hazeh. Blessed are you, Lord of the universe, King of the universe, who's brought us to this time. I am proud of the way the tradition has developed. And while I realize the problematics of referring to God as King, the insights that I glean into understanding how the system relates to kings enables me to refer to God as King, aware at the same time that there are other monikers, other terms, which we need to be using as well. Shabbat Shalom, and may we all have a good time studying Sefer Vayikra.
Thank you, Rabbi Levin Cruz, and thank you, Yael. If you have any questions or comments on the podcast, please send email to podcasts@pardesusa.org. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you on the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.